Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say. So I will say, grab a hold of your Bibles and turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. We are not quite at the end of chapter 16, and it's verse 18 in most English renderings. And the first word here is the name of the Torah portion. Of course, in this case, it is Shoftim. So Shoftim, well, Shoftim or Shofet is the word for one of them. Shoftim is plural. That's judges. So that is the name of the portion, Shoftim, and it's got to do with justice and judges. And the way it begins is this. Judges and officers you shall make in all your gates, which Yahuwah your El is giving you, tribe by tribe. So we'll have judges in the gates of all the various cities of all the various 12 tribes. And it says, they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. So that word, of course, we know the root word there is zadok. We know a zadok is one who does it, and we know that the idea is zadika is righteousness. But what is the definition? Well, it has to do with Torah. So one who is judging with in accord with righteousness is judging in accord with Torah by his instruction. And it really is that simple. So the words are inextricably bound up. To judge in accord with Torah is the essence of to judge righteously. That is what these Shoftim are supposed to do. Then it says, you shall not wrest judgment or twist it, nor shall you respect persons. In other words, you don't look at somebody and say that they're either poorly dressed or richly dressed, so must be either guilty or not guilty, whatever. Simply do not be a respecter of persons, nor shall you take a bribe. Sometimes it's rendered as a gift. For a bribe or a gift blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous, the Torah obedient. And then it says this. Now, this is one of those places where I really love the verse, and I'm going to suggest there's more to it than meets the eye, because anytime you see a word repeated twice in Hebrew, you know that it's not just an emphasis, it's a real emphasis, very strongly marked. But furthermore, there is a suggestion in the Midrash, and I think this is a really good suggestion, that the word has a kind of a dual meaning here. But anyway, it goes like this. Verse 20 says, justice, justice, shofet, shofet, shall you pursue or follow after, that you may live and inherit the land which Yahuwah your El is giving you. So one of the renderings, and I find this kind of appealing, is that there's multiple ways of looking at the law, the instruction, and of course, one of the things when we understand the difference between law and instruction is instruction is a bigger word, means use your brain. Understand that it's there are things that are not just statutes and judgments, commandments. There's examples that are given for us. There are precedents. There are stories. And we're supposed to be able to connect the dots. So what that means is one of the ways to look at this Zadok, you shall pursue is not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law too. Look behind, see what is being taught. All right. So letter of the law, spirit of the law is one way of looking at it. You shall not plant yourself an Asherah of any kind of tree beside the altar of Yahuwah your El, which you shall make you. Nor shall you set up a pillar, like the Washington phallus of Ra there, that's 666 feet tall from the bottom underground to the top. It's amazing how many phallic symbols and certain like things like that there are. Those are forbidden. You shall not set one up, which Yahuwah your El, it says, he hates these things. Nor shall you sacrifice unto Yahuwah an ox or a sheep or where there is a blemish, a stain, something that's untoward, okay, like one that's crippled or lame or whatever the case may be, or any evil thing, for that is an abomination unto Yahuwah your El. If there be found in the midst of you, within any of your gates, which Yahuwah your El is giving you, a man or a woman that does that which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah your El, in transgressing his covenant, he's going to give us a bunch of examples, but we've had several really blatant examples this week, right? Like, say, somebody who cross-dresses and commits murder and mass murder. Those are the kinds of things we're talking about. In other words, especially when it's done in the name of satanic evil, which this was as well. Someone who's done that, gone and worshipped and served other gods and worshipped them, or the sun or the moon or any of the other host of heaven, which I have not commanded you, or which I've actually commanded you not to do, as a matter of fact. And you find this out, it's told to you, and you hear it, then you shall make diligent inquiry. And behold, if it's true, And the thing is made certain that such abomination really is being wrought in Israel, then you shall bring forth that man or that woman who's done this evil thing to your gates, even the man or the woman, and you shall stone them with stones that they die. Now, what I'm going to point out here as we go through this is there are a number of interesting things, and it occurs to me, and this is one of the things that I think should really resonate with us, especially when we see how closely the things that are going on in the world literally mirror the things we're learning if we read Torah. And it's almost like he knew these things in advance, right? The lessons here are so clear, they leap off the page at us. So, what we've just had described is the death penalty for someone who is committing acts of idolatry, including basically Satanism, which is what we have seen writ real large this week. Now it says, note this, it takes two witnesses or more to confirm something that is worthy of death. So here's verse 6. At the mouth of two witnesses, or three, shall he that is to be put to death die? In other words, we need the two witnesses in order to confirm something when it's this serious, something worthy of death. At the mouth of one witness, he shall not be put to death. The hand of the witnesses shall be the first upon him to put him to death. Now, you notice that hasn't happened in a while. And afterward, the hand of all of the people. Now, here is a key verse. This is going to be repeated not just this week, but next as well. I'm going to contend this is at the heart, at the root of what is wrong with America with a K, why it is that we have transgender after transgender, mass shooting after mass shooting. Oh, yeah, they got their drugs, they got their Satanism, they got their manifestos. But this has not happened, folks. They subsidize this crap. They teach it in the public cesspools. They take children away from parents. If you don't like the fact that your little boy wants to cut off his penis and take puberty-blocking drugs, these are abominations unto the Creator, and I'm getting more than pissed about it. I hope Americans have had enough of this crap, because I sure as hell have. We have literal abominations running around, turning the country into a cesspool of evil and crime. We got parents that are wondering, why is little Johnny, why is little Jane dead? Because I put her in a place where there were idiots running around teaching them abominations from hell, and I just as might as well put the gun to their head myself, because I don't have the guts to stand up and say, no, I don't want any damn transgenders in the schools. No, I don't want these people teaching Satanism. So you shall put the evil from the midst of... Do you get the impression here? He's serious. We have not put out the evil, folks. Thou shalt not steal. Hell, in San Francisco, you can steal $1,000 a day. And the Soros DAs will say, we'll let them go, too, so they can steal some more. If you don't like it, we may just put you in jail and let them have your stuff, or let them kill you. We ought to be as mad as hell, because that's what's been unleashed, is a literal hell on earth. Because we have failed with a capital F to do what it says. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. The evil is being taught. And we got damnable parents allowing their kids to be taught this crap. Oh, the transgender flag, the rainbow flag, it's all wonderful. Little Johnny and little Jane, he, she, it, their pronouns, just as good as you cisgendered thing, you damnably lying pit of hell crap. It is not true. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. I'll take a deep breath. But folks, we ought to be mad as hell about that, because that is what has been unleashed. If, it says, there arises a matter that's too hard for you in judgment. By the way, this is not. Okay? A damned transgender walking into a school and killing a bunch of kids is not hard. And the fact that it's gone on and gone on and gone on and gone on, that's not hard either. This is not a matter of judgment. This is a matter of simple survival and walking in obedience. So this is what he's talking about, though. If we actually had real judges, we don't. We got black robe priests of Satan that are releasing these scumbags. Don't think for a second people didn't know that this damnable it that went into that school in Minneapolis, that Catholic... he actually did it from outside, shot through the stained glass windows. Don't think for a second it wasn't obvious what was going on for a while. If there arises a matter that's too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, plea and plea, stroke and stroke, even matters of controversy within your gates, well then, you shall arise and get yourself up unto the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose. The place, in other words, where he's referenced before, where he put his name. And then you shall come unto the priest, the Kohanim, the Levites, the sons of the sons of Aaron, and unto the judge, that will be in those days, the Shofet, and they shall inquire. and they shall declare unto you the sentence of judgment. Now contrast that with what we got today. You got your Soros DA that says, okay, this guy's committed murder, this guy's an illegal invader, this guy's committed rape, this guy's menaced people with a knife or a gun, hey, what the hell, we're going to let him out on the streets again. And how dare you use a gun to stop them when they try to break in your house in your cesspool cities. These are not judges, folks. These are black-robed Satanist priests. That's the absolute opposite end of the spectrum from what we're talking about here. These are real judges. These are real Kohanim. These are people that are anointed by those that are put in place by Yah. And what does it say? You shall do, according to the tenor of the sentence, which they shall declare unto you from the place where Yahuwah shall choose. Well, he took that place away because they too blew it. We don't have anywhere remotely like that today because we don't have anybody that's even remotely like a real judge in 99% of the places in this country. And you shall observe to do that which they shall teach you. Well, we haven't had Torah taught for generations. It's not taught in the Romanized, paganized church either. Hasn't been taught for 17 centuries. According to the Torah, that's the real word. In some English Bibles it says law. We know the word in the Hebrew, it really is. I've got the Hebrew sitting here. It is Torah, the instruction, which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment, which they shall tell you, which is, of course, because they're Zadikim, it is related to, it is based on Torah. Well, then you shall do that. You shall not turn aside from the sentence which they declare unto you, not to the right hand, nor to the left. And the man that does, he does so presumptuously, in not hearkening unto the Kohen that stands to minister there before you, before Yahuwah your El, or unto that Shofet, that judge, that man shall die. Thus it says, now this is an interesting word, it's actually the same word, it's just that sometimes they translate it differently, and I'm not sure why, because it's the same word in general in the Hebrew here. Thus you shall exterminate, it's probably a better word than just get rid of it, exterminate the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Do you see the problem? We have not exterminated the evil. The evil has been spawned. The evil has taken root. It is taught in the cesspools. The evil is fostered in the cesspool cities. You want to have your kids taken away? Try to exterminate the evil and say, I don't want my little Billy having his genitalia cut off before he's 12. The evil has not been exterminated, folks. It's been subsidized. Now, notice that it says this is for when we're in the land. So, arguably, we're not in the land anymore. Guess why? Because we didn't do this. Got kicked out for cause. But it says, when you have come into the land which Yahuwah your El shall give you and possess it, and you shall dwell there, and you say, oh, you know what? I think I will set a king over me like all the other nations that are round about. Now, the story here is 1 Samuel 8, right? Where the nations, the people, they actually did say almost precisely that. Samuel said, you're making a mistake here. We know the story. Anyway, you shall in any wise set a king over you, whom Yahuwah your El shall choose. So if you're going to do this, he's going to be the one that picks the king. From among your brethren, you shall set a king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you, like somebody would say, a fake Hawaiian birth certificate. Okay? Born in Kenya. Someone who is not your brother. All right, and then we're going to get some requirements for kings. These are interesting because, arguably, we don't have kings anymore. We're supposed to, if you remember the saying from the time of the founders, they didn't get the name right, but it was an interesting phrase and an interesting concept. No king but King Jesus was the time of the revolutionary era. Not going to have a king. Well, since then, we've moved down the road a long way in the wrong direction. But the king had certain requirements. One, he is not to multiply horses unto himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. Now, let's pause for a second. So, the word here is interesting, multiply horses. The king can have a horse. The king can have a team of horses. What the king is not to do is have multiplicities, literally herds of horses, so as, says here, so that he could multiply them, so that people could return to Egypt. So let's everybody mount up and go back to Egypt. So he can have quite a few horses. He's just not to multiply them. And because, he says, because Yahuwah has said unto you, you shall not return any more that way. nor shall the king multiply wives to himself. Now, this one is funny. It's kind of interesting because, of course, the whore church has lied about this one for generations. They make up stuff. They add to and they subtract from. They say, well, no, there can be only one. And a man can only have one wife. Well, it's nowhere in Scripture. And David, as you know, had, depending upon which of the Midrashim you believe, at least 13 wives, probably a few more, maybe up to 17. But David was considered to be a man after Yah's own heart, and he did not multiply wives. He added wives. So there's a difference. There's clearly a limit. Well, and then we know that, as we're going to see here too, Solomon, on the other hand, Shlomo, he had lots of wives and lots of concubines, right? Hundreds and hundreds, 300 and 700. And it looks like somewhere between David's 13 and Solomon's hundreds, we stepped over the line from adding to multiplying. So he shall not multiply wives to him, to himself, so that his heart not turn away. And Scripture told us explicitly that is what happened. Solomon, in particular, made alliances with foreign countries, and he did so. We see this throughout Europe. Okay, they would make alliances with foreign countries by taking a wife or a king from some foreign country and setting it over themselves, so that the bloodlines were all interlinked throughout Europe, for example. What also happened, and this was why Solomon was criticized, the wives brought in their pagan religion, and they did turn his heart away exactly as was foretold and as was warned against. Okay, nor, says the continuation of the verse here, nor shall he greatly multiply unto himself silver and gold. Now that's interesting too. So it's meod is the word here, means like really, really. So he could multiply silver and gold. He just can't greatly multiply silver and gold. And of course, likewise, Solomon, recall, was considered at the time to be the richest man on the planet and the richest man who ever lived, as well as the wisest. But he blew it there, because it seemed like he multiplied wives and also greatly multiplied silver and gold. Now, this next part is really fascinating, and I will contend it kind of is the opposite end of what we've seen today. Because it says that when there is a king, and he sits on his throne, the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself. In other words, he is to write out in his own hand a copy of this Torah in a scroll, a sefer, a book, out of that which is before the priests, the Kohanim. Now, if he's going to write the whole Torah, all five books, that's a lot. It could be done, but it's a whole heck of a lot. Generally, most of the Midrash, most of the sages say, okay, probably what that's referring to, this book means this particular book, Moses' speech, a.k.a. Deuteronomy, Devarim, that he's to write out a copy of this summary, kind of an abbreviated summary, but certainly most of the Torah is in Devarim. He is to write that out for himself in his own hand. And, it says, it shall be with him. He shall read therein all the days of his life, so that he may learn to fear Yahuwah, to keep all kol of the words of this Torah and these statutes to do them. What a concept. Imagine a king, even a president, even a senator, puts his hand on a Bible, swears an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States that he doesn't have a damn clue about, that he's ignorant of. And in the case of some of the last few that have sat upon the throne, or, you know, crapped upon the throne, in the case of the senile guy, I don't think he ever even cracked the thing open and read it. He didn't have a clue what was in there, but if he did, he hated it, especially the Bill of Rights. Same thing goes for Obama, who claimed to have taught constitutional law, and he was about as damnably evil when it came to the Constitution as any traitor ever sat upon the throne. So it would be nice if we actually had the concept of a ruler who could read the supreme law of the land, or the Torah. That would certainly be a lot preferable to anything we've had, to keep them and to do them. Why? Now this is interesting, we see this too, so that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren, so that he doesn't turn aside from the commandment, not to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in the kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel. So some really interesting advice for kings, particularly when it comes to this idea of let him read, study, write out a copy of the Torah in his own hand so that he knows it. And furthermore, he realizes he is not above the law. We've had a real problem with that of late, and of for years, in fact, decades even. He is just as subject to it as his brethren are. All right, the next chapter says the Kohanim. the priests, the Levites, even all of the tribe of Levi. So it's not just Kohanim in this case, but it's all of Levi. That would other, you know, the other tribes. Remember, there was Merari and the other sons of Levi, and they had different duties in the temple. But none of them have any inheritance nor portion with Israel. So they all are going to basically get support, as is described here. They shall eat the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire, and his inheritance, because they have no inheritance among their brethren. Yahuwah is their inheritance, as he has spoken to them. And this shall be the priests' due, the Kohanim, from among the people. From them that offer a sacrifice, whether it's an ox or a sheep, they shall give unto the priest the shoulder, the two cheeks, and the maw, the first fruits of the corn, of your wine, of your oil, and the first of the fleece of the sheep you shall give him. So he gets some good wool, and he gets a lot of stuff that basically is sustenance food. For Yahuwah your El has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand to minister in the name of Yahuwah, he along with his sons forever. Ha Olam. Actually, in this case, it's Ha Yamim. So it's an interesting difference. Ha Yamim means literally all the days, right? All the days. So, if a Levite comes from any of your gates, out of all Israel, where he sojourns, and he comes with all the desire of his soul unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose, so he goes to the place that Yahuwah is going to choose, then he shall minister in the name of Yahuwah as all his brethren, the Levites, do, who stand there before Yahuwah. Now, notice, this is another one of those places where, obviously, when I see the word capital L-O-R-D, unlike the Jewish understanding, right, where you see Yod Hey Vav Hey, they're supposed to say Adonai. They replace it because you're not allowed to say the name. Well, that's a rabbinic addition to or subtraction from. They're doing both, right? They added the commandment that you can't do it, and they subtracted his name right out of there. But all of these places, essentially, his name is there. And it's pretty clear. It says this Cohen is going to minister in the name of the Lord. No, he's going to minister in the real name. That's the point. Of Yahuwah Hizel, just as his brethren, the other Levites, do, who stand there before, what? The real God, Yahuwah. They shall have no portions to eat, or they shall have like portions to eat, beside that which is due according to their father's houses. So basically, they all get a share in the gifts that come from the people that are in the form of these sacrifices and offerings, and a large part of that is about sustaining the Kohanim and the Levites. So, when you have come into the land which Yahuwah your El gives you, you shall not learn to do after the abominations of these nations. Don't ask, hey, how do you celebrate Christmas? Tell me about your bunnies and your eggs and your cute little Dionysus Diana temples and how you do all your pagan nookie-nookie there in the temples and then sacrifice the children 9 months later in the fertility goddesses. No, don't do that crap. Now, crap, you say, well, that's a bad word. Mark said a bad word. Well, no. The truth is, the Hebrew word here is toiba, and it means abomination, and this is the worst crap you're going to find. Because when he calls it an abomination, that means it's worse than, there's at least one reference in Scripture to menstrual rags. Abomination is the worst word in Hebrew. It is the most loathsome thing in his sight, and that is what we're talking about here. Those things that they do in the land, for which reason, remember, they were kicked out. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, okay? Or nowadays we'd say takes them to an abortion clinic, or cuts off their genitalia there in the public cesspools, or gives them, we could go through the list, right? How about little fertility drugs? How about infertility drugs, or RU486, or puberty blockers? How many ways can we turn children into abominations? Answer, there's a few that are written in Scripture, but we've gotten to the place now where we got tons more. There shall not be found among you anyone that does any of these things, making his son or daughter pass through the fire, in other words, offering him to Molech, and of course that is precisely what's happened. Again, we saw an example this week. One that uses divination, or a soothsayer, or an enchanter, or a sorcerer, or a charmer, someone that consults a ghost, or a familiar spirit, or a necromancer. All the things that are, again, essentially taught. For whosoever does these things is an abomination unto Yahuwah. There it is. This is pretty straightforward. Because of these abominations, Yahuwah is driving them out from before you. It's kind of, in this context, it becomes real clear why he's saying don't do this. That's why they're getting kicked out. The land is literally vomiting them out before you. You, instead, shall be wholehearted with Yehuyarel, because these nations, the ones you are dispossessing, hearken unto soothsayers and unto diviners, but as for you, Yehuyarel has not suffered you to do so. Now here comes one of the more interesting prophecies in Scripture. Again, this is from Moshe. We remember that it's the second time we've seen this reference. He talked about it after Sinai, where the people said, hey, Moshe, you know, you talk to us. We can't handle this direct from God stuff anymore. And he says, there will come a prophet like unto Moshe. Here it is. A prophet, this is chapter 18, verse 15, a prophet, now that word there is nasi, will Yehuyarel raise up unto you from the midst of you, of your brethren. He will be like unto me, and this is Moses speaking, so like unto Moshe, him you shall hearken. Unto him you shall hearken. So when this prophet comes, and remember, Yeshua was asked, are you the prophet foretold? This is the only place in Torah, interestingly, where Moses, self-identifies as a prophet. When he's talking about the one who will rise up from among your brethren, a prophet like unto him. Listen to him. According to all that you did desire of Yehuyarel and Horeb. So now he's going to remind him why. Remember, you asked for this. In the day of the assembly, say, hey, let us not again have to hear the voice of Yahuwah, our El. Don't let me see this great fire anymore so that we don't die. This scared the living you-know-what out of us. We don't like it. We can't handle it. If it happens again, we'll just plain croak. So don't let that happen. And he notes, Yahuwah said to me, yeah, that thing which you have said, that is well spoken. So, at this point, it was clear. Moshe made it clear then. He is repeating it now that there will come another prophet. A prophet of among the brethren. And obviously, we're talking about Yeshua. Like unto Moses. I will raise up for them a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you. I will put my words in his mouth. And he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. He is the Torah made flesh, right? And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken to my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. But, now here's the contrast, and this is why Torah is so specific. We've seen it in Deuteronomy 12 and 13. We have the tools we need to be able to identify the real from the fake. And if Jesus, for example, had done away with the law, he would have been a fake. So we know he didn't. It was reason why he came out in his very first public address and said, I'm not changing one iota tittle. It's verboten, forbidden to add to or subtract from. He didn't do it. Here's another reminder. If there is this prophet, the prophet that claims to be like this one but isn't, this prophet who shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, doing exactly that, adding to or subtracting from, which I did not command him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, that same prophet shall die. So here's the irony, folks. The prophet which speaks presumptuously and does add to and subtract from, in other words, what the whore church says Jesus did, raised the bar, added to, that Jesus deserved to die. How's that for disgustingly ironic and a horrible twisting? That's how we can tell the lie from the real, the truth from the fake. Because he did no such thing. He never changed one yod nor tittle. He did exactly what he said he was going to do, and he never, ever modified it. So, when somebody says he changed his mind, he couldn't be trusted, they're talking about a liar. And that prophet deserves to die, shall die, says the word. Now, if you say in your heart, how shall we know a word which Yahuwah has not spoken? Here's the answer. When the prophet speaks in the name of Yahuwah, if the thing doesn't follow nor come to pass, that is the thing which Yahuwah has not spoken. The prophet has spoken it presumptuously. Don't be afraid of him. The interesting comment here, of course, the question is, how long? Right? How do we know? And I've always thought this is a fascinating question. He is right, but and there are prophecies in Scripture that have not yet been fulfilled. But we know that they will be. Again, how do we know? There are prophets, obviously, that will say things, right, next Tuesday this is going to happen. It doesn't happen on Tuesday, you're done. But on the other hand, when it's a prophecy that there will come a day when this mark of the beast happens, well, we haven't necessarily seen it yet, although we can smell it from here. We know those things are going to happen. The question, what is the time frame? And I've always thought that's fascinating when it comes to looking at this verse. There are going to be other tests, by the way, that we'll see for the prophet as well, including if he, like in Deuteronomy 13, says go after other gods, go after the fakes. All right, the next chapter says, when Yehuyarel shall cut off those nations whose land Yehuyarel is giving you, and you do, in fact, secede them, in other words, you replace them, and you dwell in their cities and in their houses, then you shall separate three cities for yourself in the midst of your land, which Yehuyarel is giving you to possess it. So we know these, they're referred to as the cities of refuge. You shall prepare the way, divide the borders of your land, which Yehuyarel causes you to inherit, into three parts, that every manslayer may flee thither. There's an old English word, a place for him to go. The person who is, now remember, a manslayer is not guilty of murder in the first degree, did not do this on purpose, this was an accident, but nevertheless he needs to get this place so that he is safe from the avenger of blood. All right, so now we're going to get some more specifics. We've seen this before. We're going to get a repetition again so that it's very clear what we're talking about. This is the case of the manslayer. Different word even. This is not somebody who has committed murder by lying in wait. This guy can flee to this place and live. Whoso kills his neighbor unawares was an accident. He didn't hate him in time past, right? I want to kill that son of a, you know what. So there is no reason to suspect that he did it on purpose because he's been saying he was going to do it. Or he left a manifesto, for example. Or he engraved all of the magazines of his guns with little dead kids and said, kill Donald Trump and all that kind of stuff. No, that is not a manslayer that was an accident. That is a murderer in the first degree. Big difference. So when a man goes to the forest with his neighbor, so this is an example. Going to go into the forest with his neighbor, going to chop down some wood. And his hand fetches a stroke with the axe to cut down the tree, but oh no, right, off comes the axe head. It slips from the helve, in other words, the handle, comes off the axe handle, and it hits his neighbor in the head so that he dies. Well, then that fellow needs to get out of town. He flees to one of these cities so that he can live, lest the avenger of blood, in other words, one of his kin, pursue the manslayer while his heart is hot, right? He didn't want to hear it. You kill my brother, you dirty rat. Okay, so he overtakes him because it's a long ways away, and if he does, he overtakes him and he kills him. He might smite him mortally, whereas he was not deserving of death. And of course, if the avenger of blood had known he wasn't in this hot-blooded mode, he might have had a cooler head prevail. He might have known better. So basically, it's a tragedy on both ends because the fellow didn't get to the place where he needed to be. He wasn't deserving of death, inasmuch as he had not hated him in time past. Therefore, he says, I command you, saying, you shall separate these three cities for yourselves. And if Yehuyarel enlarges your border, as he has sworn that he would do to your fathers, and he gives you all of the land, remember, the land never did get to the ultimate size that it was foretold to be. So there's another example of something that will happen, just hasn't yet. If you shall keep all this commandment to do it, which I command you this day, love Yehuyarel, walk evermore in his ways, then you shall add, ultimately, he says, you'll add three more cities beside the first three, so that innocent blood is not shed in the midst of your land, which Yehuyarel gives you for an inheritance, and that blood be upon you. It's a big deal when innocent blood is shed. So that's why it's so important that this manslayer here not be guilty of murder in the first degree. It was an accident. If any man, though, hates his neighbor, he lies in wait for him. This is where we hear the English word premeditation, right? Murder in the first degree. He lies in wait. He rises up against him, smites him mortally so that he dies. Then he flees to one of those cities. Uh-oh, no good, dude. You don't belong there. The elders of the city shall send him and fetch him hence. Out of here. All right. This is where you find a fellow who is, let's just say, an illegal invader coming into the city. Oh, yeah, I'm innocent. No, you're a murderer. We're sending you out of here. Your blood is on your own head. He sends him into the hand of the avenger of blood so that he may die. Here, take him. He's yours. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall put away the blood of the innocent from Israel. Do we see a common thread here? Put away the blood of the innocent from Israel that it may go well with you. You shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which, as has of old time been set. So in other words, there are places where there are going to be borders that define the borders of the tribes and of the inheritances. You don't move those. In your inheritance which you shall inherit in the land which Yahuwah gives you to possess it. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any Torahlessness, any transgression, or any sin. In any sin that he sins, it takes two or three witnesses. So at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall a matter be established. If, and we've seen this, haven't we? If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man to bear perverted witness against him. Here's an obvious example. Let's say we have a whole bunch of scumbags get together and say, we don't like the results of the election. We're going to pervert the election. We're going to make up. We've got this Steele dossier, and we're going to make up all these crimes here, and we're going to go after those people, and we're going to put them in jail for January 6th crimes. We're going to make all this stuff up. What is the result of that? If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man to bear perverted witness against him, both the men between whom there is controversy shall stand before Yahuwah. Now, can you imagine Obama, Clapper, Comey standing before Yahuwah? Well, it'll happen one of these days, probably in private, and I wouldn't want to be there anyway. But I would like to see them stand before Yah. Regardless, it says, this person shall stand before Yahuwah, before the priests and the judges that shall be in those days. So, isn't this an irony? If we actually had real judges, as opposed to these black robe priests of Satan, that would actually execute righteous judgment, then these things could happen. The judges will inquire diligently, and behold, if the witness is a false witness, and he has testified falsely against his brother, maybe he got 51 people to sign a letter, pay no attention to that laptop from hell, you shall do unto him as he had thought, had tried, had purposed to do to his brother. All right? So you basically say, we've seen this too, right? Throw this person in jail because he committed he called me the N-word. He committed rape. We've seen any numbers of these cases that have been tried in the press. Turns out how many of them were fakes, right? Somebody that, what was the guy's name that was Jesse Smollett? All right? Put a noose around his own neck. Unrighteous judgment. Now, he didn't claim any specific person, did he? In his case, it was just general. That was they were trying to come after me. But when it's an individual, and where there is a specific person, the crime is you have lied, you have committed false witness, you will therefore suffer the penalty of what you tried to do to somebody else. Isn't that ironic? I guess in Jesse Smollett's case, he really would get lynched by those that he tried to basically convict of doing that which they didn't do. Here it is again. Notice these words. Thus you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. And those that remain shall hear and fear and shall no more commit any such evil in the midst of you. We do not do this. We have not done this, folks. The unrighteous witnesses get to be president. They get to sit in the Senate. They get to continue. They get to be head of the FBI. They get to do all kinds of things. They get to inject people. They become Tony Fauci's. They kill people by the millions. Your eye shall not pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. How about lethal injection for Tony Fauci? That sounds like the appropriate penalty. Measure for measure, in other words, is the concept here, folks. And we're talking in this case not about restitution. We're talking about people that have brought something upon themselves, and they deserve damn full well exactly what they get, listen carefully, from their own mouths. That which they sought to do to else, to others, they have brought upon themselves. And what's the goal? You shall put away the evil from the midst of you, and all Israel shall hear and fear, and there will be no more like it. We haven't done it. We got tons like it. How many transgender mass murders do we have to see before we realize, you know, there's a problem here with these things that are abomination? When you go forth to battle, it says, against your enemies, and you see horses and chariots, people that are bigger, more numerous than you are, don't be afraid of them, because Yahuwah your El is with you. He is, after all, the one who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt. And it'll be that when you draw nigh into battle, the priest shall approach, and he speaks to the people, and he says the following, "Hear, O Israel, you're drawing nigh this day unto battle against your enemies. Don't let your heart be faint. Don't be alarmed, nor be frightened of these folks, because Yahuwah your El, he is the one that goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. And the officers then will speak to the people, to the basically the troops, saying, anybody here? What man here has built a new house but hasn't dedicated it? Now think about this. Somebody's built a new house, hasn't dedicated it. Go back. Don't stay in the battle. Go back. Return to his house, lest he die in the battle and some other man dedicate his house. How about a guy that's planted a vineyard, but he hasn't yet eaten the fruit? I could relate to that one. I got a vineyard I've been working on, haven't yet eaten the fruit. Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man use the fruit thereof. How about a man that has betrothed a wife, but he has not yet taken her? He has not yet consummated the union. Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man, lechak, take her. The officers then shall speak further to the people, say, okay, we got any cowards here? Got any lily-livered yellowbacks here? You got any people that are fearful and faint-hearted? You go home too. I remember Sam Adams' famous line. He says, we seek not your counsel nor your arms. Let your chains rest lightly upon you, and may your posterity forget that you were our countrymen. Yeah. Faint-hearted? You go home too, lest your brethren's heart melt like yours. In other words, folks, cowardice is contagious. We see that today as well. That's why we have so many damned people that commit treason and others that just basically are too coward. They're cowards. They're lily-livered scum. They won't even talk about it, much less stand up to them. Cowardice is contagious. It shall be when the officers have made an end of speaking all these things to the people, the captains of hosts shall be appointed at the head of the people. Now, when you draw nigh unto a city to fight against it, first you proclaim peace unto it. Now, it shall be, if the city answers with an answer of peace and opens the gates to you, well, then all the people that are found therein shall become tributary unto you and shall serve you. In other words, they become bondservants. Now, if it will not make peace with you, oops, sorry, Charlie, but instead makes war against you, then you besiege it. And when Jehoiarel delivers it into your hand, and he will, that's the promise, you shall smite every male therein with the edge of the sword. Lefi cherev. The mouth of the sword. The women, though, the little ones, the cattle, everything that's in the city, the spoil, the gold, the silver, the clothing, whatever else is in there, you take that for a prey. It's called prize or capture or booty. Spoils of war, you take that. You shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which Jehoiarel has given you. Now notice, there are two different kinds of enemies that we're going to talk about. So this is kind of the type A. This is what you shall do unto all the cities which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations. Because there are other nations, folks, that he's saying, and this is, politically incorrect. We got a lot of politically incorrect stuff in Torah. This is a Torah portion that has a lot of this. Those aren't going to live. Howbeit, of these cities, these peoples, that Jehoiarel is giving you for an inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes. But, wow, this is hard, harsh. But you shall utterly destroy them. Here's the list. The Hittite, and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, as Jehoiarel has commanded you. Now, a quick bit of markology. I have come to conclude that other folks, Steve Quayle's probably the primary proponent of this that I've known of for the longest. But basically, there's quite a few folks that are saying, you know, why these particular people? They seem to largely be descendants of the Anakim, the giants, the Raphaim, the half-breeds, the sons of the sons of the Nephilim, the fallen angels. In other words, their DNA has been tainted. We look in Scripture, we see Noah was perfect in his generations. He was Tamim. It looks like his DNA was untainted. Again, I cannot prove this, but it certainly, I think you can make a good case from Scripture. And it's a case that is good enough that I tend to believe, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That is what is being described here, are these particular peoples who he says the bloodline needs to be eliminated. And there's this other thing, too, which is interesting, and I think we see exactly what happens when this didn't happen. Because they will teach you if you don't do this. And the reason you're going to kill them is so that they do not teach you after all of their abominations, which they have done unto their so-called gods, their Elohim, and as a result, you would sin against Yahuwah, your El. What has the whore church done? What was the Middle Age time, right? We're going to take all these pagan customs, these wonderful pagan things that survived, bunnies and eggs and Ishtar, and human sacrifice. I'm going to just Christianize those and bring them on in. Wrong. That is exactly what we were told not to do. It's what they did. It's why we're still in exile. You are not to allow them to teach you to do all these abominations that they did to their gods, which is why they were kicked out. So it says, when you besiege a city a long time in making war against it to take it, you shall not destroy the trees thereof by wielding an axe against them. Trees. Don't cut the trees down. You can eat of them. So he's talking about specific kinds of trees, right? Apple trees, pecan trees, olive trees, almond trees. Trees that are food. You don't cut them down, for is the tree of the field man that it should be besieged of you? Tree didn't do anything wrong, in other words. Only the trees of which you know that they are not trees for food. Now, those trees you can cut down. Because you need to build bulwarks. You need to build stuff out of those trees. Use their wood, basically. Build bulwarks against the city that makes war unto you until it falls. Now, finally, now this is the last of the chapters in this week's Torah portion. And this one is one that is honestly tragic. And it kind of is an interesting culmination of what we've seen about this idea of put away the evil from among you. So listen carefully to the story. This is one of those things, too, we would say, oh, well, this doesn't apply anymore, does it? Well, too bad. Because we see one of the bits of wicked fruit again this week on this score. If someone is found among you, slain in the land which Yahuwah your El gives you to possess it, but this poor person is lying out in the field, and it's not known who it is that has slain or smitten him, then, so here's a poor dead body just out in the middle of nowhere. Then the elders of the cities, your judges, those that are from the near cities, will come forth, and they shall measure the distances to the cities that are round about the person that is slain. So there's two or three cities that are within, you know, a reasonable distance. You measure the distance to the nearest city, see which one is the closest. And it shall be that the city which is nearest unto the slain man, the elders of that city shall take a heifer. This is called the Eglah Arufa. Take a heifer of the herd, which has not been wrought with, which is not drawn in the yoke. So basically, we're taking a young heifer, it's not been put under the yoke. The elders of that city shall bring down the heifer to a rough valley, which may neither be plowed nor sown, and there they break the poor little heifer's neck in the valley. So the poor heifer dies. And the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near. For them, Yahuwah your El has chosen to minister unto him and to bless the name of Yahuwah. Right? Not bless the name of... what name? They don't know it. How are they going to bless it? Bless the name of Yahuwah. And according to their word shall every controversy and every stroke be. So now the elders of that city, which are nearest to the slain man, they wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. Again, the term here in the Hebrew is the Eglah Arufa. The heifer whose neck was broken. Now, the Rashiism on this one, and it's not just Rashi, I think there's probably some other Midrashim that have picked up the theme too. What we're seeing here is a process, and the process is intended to outrage. We've got a lot of outrage of late, right? Think about it. Poor heifer did nothing. This is poor little cow going to be out there, and the elders of the city are going to wash their hands over the body of this slain heifer whose neck was broken. And they speak and they say the following. Our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. So Rashi's comment, nope, we didn't even do it indirectly. We took care of the stranger. In other words, what he is suggesting here is, had we known about this guy, he wouldn't be dead. But we don't know what happened here. We did not even indirectly participate in this. This is a tragedy. The death of some man. For no obvious reason, we don't know who did it. We don't know. Only thing we know is that he was closest to our city. So we're going to come out here and we're going to perform this rite over the body. And we're going to say, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. Forgive, O Yahuwah, your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and not suffer innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people Israel. How much of a contrast is that to what we're seeing this week? And I keep coming back to this in our faces example. Yet another transgender. Yet another sick, twisted, satanic, and there's no doubt about it. If you saw what was up online, folks, this was a satanic, lying son of a bitch. An evil individual who went there with murder in mind and nothing else. And he wanted to kill kids. This is the worst of the worst. This is truly Satanism, and it's exactly what's being talked about here in every way. And what are we hearing from the left? Oh, we don't give a damn about the kids, but we should. Oh, we do want to take the guns away. It's a great excuse. Don't get us wrong. But as far as transgenders, we're going to deny that that was even the case. We're going to lie about that. Our hands have not shed innocent blood. The damned hell, you liars! Your hands have shed the blood. The hands of everybody who was involved in this. The hands of the people who put those kids there and allowed them to have this happen to them. There's plenty of blame to go around. But the hands of those that are basically saying we're going to foster, subsidize, teach, lionize, glorify, deify this transgender abomination, their blood is all over the place. This is the exact opposite. Forgive, O Yahuwah, your people whom you have redeemed. Do not suffer innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people, Israel. That blood shall be forgiven. Are we seeing anything in remotely, any way similar to this today? Let me say it as clearly as I can. Hell no! We're seeing the exact opposite. So it says, shall you put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Not happening. Not happening. And it's why we get it again and again and again. And I hear these people saying, oh, well, so what we got to do is we got to punish the rest of you. Got to take away your right to defend yourself from the kind of crap that we intend to do to your kids too. Oh yeah, and to your wife while we're at it. And your children's children who haven't even been born yet and won't be if we get our way, because we're going to inject you as soon as we get you disarmed. We're going to take your God and we're going to put him right in the same place where we've put these other things that were once protected by law and that were once considered part of his word. We have not done this, and we are suffering the direct result of it. So you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Hell, they don't even allow his name to be spoken in most of the whore churches anymore. Do you notice that? They don't even know what his name is in most of these places. They don't even know what his son's name is either. Because they even got the wrong one there. It could not be more bold, more blunt, more in your face than where we are and why we are where we are than when we read a portion like this and see just how far in almost every respect we have come. Because the one thing that has not been done, put away the evil from among you. Oh, okay, does this mean if someone kills a family member, we can or should kill them? That's an interesting... Well, you know, it says in hot blood. And let me just say, understand that we're not in the land anymore. Okay, now I realize that's a cop-out. And but it's true. These are commandments in this case that had to do with a city of refuge for someone who is innocent of this blood in the land. We've been kicked out of the land for cause. So I'll just put it this way. I would say that were I sitting on a jury, if we actually had juries, we haven't had an honest jury in this country in 100 years, folks, but if I was to sit on a jury of peers, and somebody was to say, you know, my kid was at school, and this teacher basically cut his genitalia off and killed my son in the process because he bled out. And the man who then went and said, okay, and I took that teacher and I gutted them like a fish and I hung the body up. And yeah, damn it, I'd do it again. I would say that guy walks. I'm not going to convict him of murder. All right, that's my personal opinion. And if we actually had trial by jury, that's all it would take was one person willing to stand up and say no. Because that was the essence of trial by jury. So, you know, we're so far away, I guess, from anything even remotely related to this today, and not in the land, that I would say we got a long ways to go before we get back to that. But what I encourage folks to do, and this is essentially the gist of this Torah portion, understand, It starts with, so you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you. So you shall put away the evil from among you. We have not even remotely put away the evil. Now, I will say this. Had I or anyone else that had been carrying a gun been in the vicinity of this guy in Minneapolis and seen a fellow dressed all in black barricading the doors of a church, pulling out a rifle and starting to shoot bullets through the stained glass, I'm going to blow that bastard into his hellish reward before he gets off another round, if I can help it. So, yeah. So you shall put away the evil from among you. We haven't gotten there. Again, there are so many things in Torah where we have come so far away that what we have to do, the process begins with turn, right? Return to me. And we are so far away, we got a long ways to go just to make the turn, much less to start moving back in the right direction. Okay, and I encourage folks to think about those kind of things, because, and I had this discussion this afternoon, the idea of come out of her, what does it mean to come out of her? How do we begin that process? Those are the kind of things we're going to talk about tomorrow as we do the Midrash, and probably a lot over coming weeks, because there are some more of these Torah portions that are going to basically point in this same direction.